I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody, Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast with iHeartRadio and 111 Productions. And I am joined by my ball club here, my team, Amy Sugarman, Danielle Romo, Riley Prius, Priestess, Priceless, Riley Priceless.
Very close.
Riley, Pricelicious.
Even better. I feel bad because after Milo and Isaac, people are stuck back with us again. So it's like, we feel a little bad about that.
I don't feel bad.
I do.
I think our four combined personalities make up two of theirs. I think the math works out for us somewhat. People shaking their heads all over the world.
Because we read the reviews. And so when we read the reviews, we know the truth.
But no, I stopped reading them.
They are painful sometimes.
Sometimes they're very painful.
Because we're just here trying to love a show.
It's it.
Trying to love a show. Yeah.
The personal invective I feel is unnecessary, but I think it's character building.
Yeah, it does make you stronger. You cry the first, 100, and then you're like, I don't have any tears left. Okay.
Character building experiences. They're taking me down a bunch of notches. And I just was like, what? I'm reading your guys, and I'm like, God, I hope that doesn't happen to me. And then I'll read one, and that's happening to me now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are, they come after anybody. It doesn't matter.
But we love them. We love them all. Right.
And we're trying to do what they say. I will say that. Right. We read the reviews and we go, okay, good note. We're going to try that.
Yes.
So we're taking the criticism.
We're good about that. We implement a lot of the ideas coming from these
100%.
Very personal missives, shall we? Communications.
Well, Emily in Wonderland, I can't wait to hear your thoughts because I have a lot.
Emily in Wonderland? It just really hit me how desperate Emily is to have a great relationship. She's got all this stored up love and wants to shower Rory with it, and all the love and excitement that she could not shower on Lorelai because Lorelai left, and she's been waiting for so long, and now she has her chance. And I was discussing this with my wife. I said, Emily is just, she was devastated when they walked into the shed. And I mean, that was a very, very powerful moment of the entire series so far. And made Rory a room and called her and asked her what she loved the most, what colors and what band and, what flowers your favorite. Made her this beautiful room. And I guess Lorelai didn't really have much of a problem with it. A little bit. I mean, she was a little taken aback, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't not expect that, right? But I think Emily was justified. And from her point of view, did you really hate us that much?
Yeah.
Where, you denied yourself a relationship with us to live in a shed with shovels leaning up against a wall with your baby daughter and feeding ducks. And I mean, like, what? I don't blame her, but so I was having this conversation with my wife, and she explained that, the mother-daughter dynamic can be far more overbearing than, the grandmother-granddaughter dynamic. So there's a lot of pressure for, a young Lorelai to become like Emily. I think Emily wanted her to be like her, and there was her overbearing nature to keep the family dynasty going and to keep the traditions going. And it was, everything is very at a certain level, very superficial, and appearances must be kept up. And this is just how it has to go. This is how a Gilmore behaves. This is how a Gilmore speaks. Mm-hmm. This is how a Gilmore, this is how a Gilmore lives. And, Lorelai just was not down for it. And the more pressure you put on her, the more she's going to go away.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's the, you know, the Paris Hilton story, right? It's like, well, if you, my, I don't know about that. My wife informed me about that.
she made the comparison.
She made a comparison.
Yeah. I felt like Emily was justified in the way she felt. Mm-hmm. It's the way she expresses it that comes across very harsh.
Right.
And I think then it really pushes Lorelai away. Because if Emily would approach it differently and say, it broke my heart to see that when we would have been here for you, why did that happen the way it did? And what was interesting is Rory brings it up later when they're walking after they left and said, do you think the two of you will ever really communicate about it? Mm-hmm. Nope.
Yeah, she said no.
Interesting.
No way. And you know, who would sit there and tolerate the... And here's another interesting thing that came up. And it's like, you know, during the opening scene, the dinner scene, hey, you know, and I couldn't find two additional chairs. I'm two chairs short of a set. And Lorelai says, I'll say. And I realized that, you know, the only reason Emily is taking this is to be with her granddaughter. She's tolerating all of that. All of those
sarcasm.
All the sarcasm and all the hatred and all the insults. And she's just, and Lorelai probably feels like she's just giving it back to her mom, what her mom gave her.
You make a great point.
But it's not how anybody in the real world would ever interact with their family. It wouldn't happen. This is why I think Lorelai is one of the more interesting characters in the history of television, because it's all subtext that's being expressed.
Mm-hmm.
This is all the stuff that nobody ever said, but now she's saying it.
Yeah, Rory and Richard don't communicate the way Emily and Lorelai do. Mm-hmm. They come much from a more reserved way and with more kindness. Lorelai and Emily just have this stabby snarkiness when they go at it. Justified, but it's just too mean.
But it's also, Lorelai also extends this to all other characters in the drama. I mean, she's subtextual. She verbalizes subtext with me. She does it with Rachel. All those quippy little jokes with Rachel. She does it with everyone.
And especially with Luke. It comes from a place of more love and kindness. Mm-hmm. But even the jokes when she's in the apartment and then the scene, which we'll discuss all this, but the scene in the stock room was really cool.
I do too. Great scene.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, it makes me feel like, you know, Amy is writing. The writing is influenced by her father because it feels like shtick, you know, not in a negative sense, but it feels like, okay, I'm going to make a lead character. Obviously, you know, Lorelai is what Amy maybe wishes she was, or a version of herself that it physically looks like this and verbalizes all this sort of kind of shticky comedian stuff. Her dad was I don't know if her dad was a huge comedian, but he was in that circle of all those big comedians. So that's what she grew up with.
I think you're right. It is sticky.
Yeah.
But I like it.
I do too. I mean, it's very funny and fast and fast and funny. I'm a big fan of fast and funny. But it's interesting.
And that's why people like watching this show so many times.
Because it's all the things that they want to say that nobody in the real world would ever say.
And you miss things. So when that's like, you know, Isaac even talked about it, that he would just watch it through and watch it through again. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of show because you no matter what, you miss stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're watching again, it's like fresh content.
Right.
So you're just like, oh my God.
Right.
And it's so dense and so fast that there's no way the human brain could like even retain it all.
Right.
So you're just getting fresh episodes each time you go around the loop of the whole series.
Very interesting device. Very, very interesting way to approach a television. It really is. Very clever.
There's so much ping-ponging between Luke and Lorelai. And it is so fast and there's so many callbacks to even with the curtains, you know, they're up in the apartment and there's the reference to the curtains. And then of course we get the callback and that's why you're just like, oh my God, this show is so clever and you love it because you're just like, yep, the curtains, you know, like it's just. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even when Rachel says, did you tell me about the hat fashion show? Like it was just like, and there's so much and it's so fast.
Right. It's all, but yeah, but it's all shtick. It's like, oh yeah. Oh, those photographs of Luke and I are, or you and Luke are in the bathroom and Laura, I so don't want to know why. You know, this guy.
Yes,
it's always, you know, something. It's like bam, bam, bam.
Which is why when you get those scenes where the shtick is gone, they're that much more powerful.
There you go.
Because you're like, and that's why you just get this lump in your throat and this hurt in your chest because you're like, oh God.
Right.
It just got real.
Right. Just got real. And it gets so real. And it's just very clever. It's just a very clever device, you know, and it's constant. It must have been fun to really, must have been so much fun to play that, you know. It must have been so much fun for Lauren Graham to just execute all of those great lines. I mean, how much fun to sit down and read those scripts and be in the table read and read all those scripts. And I remember those table reads. I mean, she was just like, she was getting laughs at the table.
It seems like
reads.
You would get on a high. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
As you're going through those scenes and the adrenaline's kind of going, and it feels like such a rush because the way the scenes are, it's just like a dance, you know? And so I was going to ask you, like, do you remember, I would almost think you were exhausted at the end of the day because you're just going and going and going.
It's, I mean, we're doing it as comedy, but at the end of the day, it's aggressive hostility toward herself, toward other characters, toward her mother, toward me, toward, I mean, it's all deflecting and it's denial. It's, you know, it's all that stuff. So it's a little bit draining on your energy. But to play it is fun. And to be the straight man to all those great lines is fun because it's all about timing. You know, it's like, it's all that comedic timing. She does it so beautifully. I can't wait to get her on the show.
Can you make a comparison between your work on this show and your work on, say, The Event?
Oh, God. Night and day.
Because the characters are so different.
Night
so,
yeah, and
what,
day.
What is that? Can you give me a little, like, your sort of what it feels like? Was this more fun?
Well, yeah. Okay, so the next series I did after Gilmore was called Aliens in America. And that was really great comedy writing as well. It was just a different kind. You know, it was like half hour sitcom writing in a single camera format, you know what I mean? So it felt a little more real, but it had those, and it was a all-star team of comedy writers because nobody was doing half hour anymore. And so we had all these Emmy winning showrunners on the staff, and we were just on the writing staff, and the three showrunners were like these, you know, these giants of the comedy business.
So was that more comparable to your experience on Gilmore Girls?
A little bit, not the time. There was some timing differences. It wasn't so like one character just dominating the entire thing, like you know the way Lorelai's character just sort of like, you know, goes through every single character like that, like a comedic buzzsaw. And we're sort of following her narrative, and we'll follow Rory too, but it always comes back to her and Rory and her and her mom and her and Luke, and you know, so she's the core of the show. But then when I got to The Event in 2010, it was like, this is a drama. There's nothing funny about this. Yeah. You know, they had some issues with the writing because they changed, the original showrunner got swapped out for somebody who, in my opinion, had no feel for this type of material. And it was odd. It was very difficult to do. It was really difficult.
So it was not your same experience you had on
Gilmore. It was very, very difficult to do because it was kind of confusing. It was a show that was kind of all over the place in terms of.
Yeah, I loved the show, but I agree. Right. I was sort of like, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like you thought this is going to be so, it was sort of ahead of its time where you're like, oh, this is so cool.
But it was sort of being.
And then it kind of flopped.
But it was being retooled in the moment. So you can't really do that and pull that. But anyway,
so
but Gilmore
you,
was definitely.
When you look at those shows, like, do you feel like Gilmore was so much more of a family for you as opposed to these other shows?
Well, I was thinking about that today when I watched the episode again right before we came on the air. And there's this, you know, the scene in the diner scenes with Rachel and Lorelai. And I just thought, boy, I miss that set. You know, I miss that job. Mm-hmm. I really miss having that job because it was a family feeling, you know, and it was like, that was our. you know, the back lot at Warner Brothers was our real estate. That was ours. The entire back lot of Warner Brothers was Stars Hollow. And we were there for 7 years. And it was great. That was great to be on that.
And I think we felt it as every guest has come on, but really mm-hmm. with Milo, it was like, wow, you really got the closeness between the two of you. And then I think what I experienced with Isaac was he expressed so well his love for the show, better than any of us are ever mm-hmm. able to communicate it. And then I was like, mm-hmm. oh, wow, like it yeah. is so heartwarming. It just yeah. is like what this show did for you all, but also for the audience. It just, people just love it so much. Yeah. And I think maybe we're getting nostalgic already because we're coming, you know, we're getting closer to the end of season one in our recaps. And so I am starting to think like, wow, this show really means a lot to people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without question. And it should, because it's all sort of shared experiences. I mean, everybody can relate to these because everybody can sort of pick and choose what experiences they've had, and they're highlighted in the show. These are all universal themes, right? So
in the stock room, mm-hmm. I think what stood out to me is, and I am like a terrible actor, so I would never be able to do this. It's the glance. So you two are talking and she sort of says, I mean, unless there's something, you know, mm-hmm. like standing in your way.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you know, there's nothing standing in my way. But the expressions on both your faces is like, we love each other.
Right. It's like a couple of riverboat gamblers holding great hands, and nobody's going to.
And it was just like.
Just bluffing each other.
Yeah. Wow. And I think Lauren, when I watch Lorelai's expressions, she's so talented because not only does she deliver like the funny lines so perfectly, but she delivers a facial expression, just a tiny mm-hmm. little thing. Mm-hmm. And you so get it. And that's what I thought in the stock room was like. And obviously that was the intention. Mm-hmm. But boy, did it work. Because yeah. you're like, wow. Mm-hmm. Why do you two not just tell each other?
She had, you know, she has that job of appearing vulnerable, but still guarded. And still mm-hmm. doesn't want to let on to me what her intentions really are. But yeah. it's kind of obvious to an audience watching it.
Yeah, and she's, you know, I do like her relationship with Rachel. They do seem like, you know, I don't think Lorelai is like a backstabber. She's not going to mm-hmm. tell Rachel these things right. and support Rachel and tell you to date Rachel and then suddenly like kiss you in the stock room. Right. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like that is not her move. Right. She's not that. She's very genuine. So she really, you believe that she does want you to be happy. And then in the movie theater scene, when Rory and Lorelai are seeing you guys and he looks happy, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. But there's just that little part that's like, he looks happy. I'm so happy for him, except my heart is breaking a little bit.
Right. And isn't it interesting how they keep those worlds separated? The Gilmore world is one world. Luke's, the Stars Hollow world is another world. And Luke's world is a completely separate universe. And rarely do they cross the streams. And when they do, it can be very explosive. But yeah, I, you know, the dynamic between Rory is the sweetest person. Oh, God, is she okay. a smart,
agree.
Sweet person.
Just the way My she is with God. Her grandma and taking her around the town and getting her the sneakers. And I mean, there was so much in this episode. The scene between Mrs. Kim and Emily is so genius mm-hmm. with the two of them negotiating over the furniture, and Lane and Rory are watching and like, I wish we had some popcorn, you know, like, it, and that's just one little scene in this episode. And that wasn't even like really a major thing. And you're like, God, there's so much happening. And Kirk was amazing in this yeah. episode. And you and Rachel and the triangle between you, Rachel, and Lorelai is a whole thing in itself, because you are uncomfortable with their friendship. You don't want to say it. Yeah. And why are they becoming friends? And then the three of you, I mean, it's just, oh, so much.
Yeah. I, one of the funnier moments for me, well, I'll just tell you right now, the best moment, the two best moments in that whole show were Yannick and Rune. I mean, that Yannick Rune scene just had me in tears. I mean, what? And you have so many to choose from.
I can't wait till Riley tries to reenact that scene.
And no, we should do that. Riley, are you ready for a French accent? You gotta give it a shot. And who's gonna be Rune? I'm not gonna be Rune. Amy, you gotta be Rune.
Oh my gosh. I can't even be Rune. It was so funny because when we were preparing for this episode, we were talking about, you know, who's on the episode. And Danielle's like, you know, Rune comes back on this episode. And I literally said to Danielle, I think we've all had enough of Rune. And it's just like,
no. God. A little did we know that we did not have enough of him, because here he was making us laugh again. Oh my God. What? I mean, Truesdale, what a great scene that was.
And his scene with Emily. Oh. Wait, Riley, try and do a little Michelle.
Go ahead.
What was the line again, Scott?
I'm sorry, you must be in the wrong place. Perhaps you should be in the YMCA or a bus depot.
I feel like you need eyebrows when you do it. I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place. You must be looking for the YMCA.
You sound Russian. That's not French. Do it. Try again. Try again. Deep in the throat. Deep in the throat.
You must be in the wrong. I don't know. It always comes out Russian.
No one thinks this is funny but us.
I know.
But we think it's so funny that we're just going to keep doing it. Because everyone's like, yeah, that part's not funny. And we're like, it's so hilarious.
Yeah, I know. It is. It does.
I love Michelle.
I do too. Oh, God. What a character.
Oh,
and how about the mean? How about the mean?
Wait, Scott, really quick. We just need to play one little clip, really quick.
Go ahead.
Don't bring on my kid. Go away.
Easton, can you do one more? Just one more. Do the Scott one. Do the Scott one.
You know, maybe sometime we could.
I don't know why that's so funny.
And then in the theater when Lorelai. She says
to Kirk,
You need a little seat of fiddle middle pan. You don't want to be driving a tractor with that. You get drowsy. And she did it with a little southern accent. It was hysterical.
Oh, I love when Kirk's like, because Rory and Lorelai are talking, and she's like, You got a cold, Kirk? So good. The whole thing. Wait. I know we need to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear what you think of Luke and Rachel.
Okay. All right, when we come back after these messages, we're going to get my thoughts on Luke and Rachel. And you might be a little bit surprised. Anyway, we'll be back after this. All right, so we're back, everybody. Scott Patterson, I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio, 111 Productions. We're going to discuss, what do we want to discuss? What I think of Luke and Rachel? Want to talk about Luke and Rachel? Amy, you want to get into that?
Pardon me, we're having a small problem.
No. You can talk to us. We're here for you.
I need to know about Luke and Rachel because you tell me. I just want to listen to your thoughts.
He seems happy, you know. It's just, you know, look, when you have a character like Rachel with a history of abandoning and running scared repeatedly, then that's what's going to happen. You know, that's what they're training the audience to expect it and to get ready for it. Cause no matter how good it gets, it's coming again. And that's basically how I feel about it. And he's being very guarded because how can he? Here's the thing that confuses me, and I played it. Mm-hmm. Is he in love with Rachel, or is he in love with Lorelai? And I think that he is trying. I think there are residual feelings for Rachel that he can't avoid, but they aren't as deep as his feelings for Lorelai. And he has no choice, but life has thrown him this.
Yep.
You know, this sort of situation, and he's doing the best he can with it because, you know, he's not a jerk. He's not going to be mean to Rachel.
Yep.
Right. So he's kind of hanging in there as much of a friend and a lover and a boyfriend as he can, because it's almost like an obligation. It's the right thing to do, but.
So accurate. I think that is exactly how it landed to me. Mm-hmm. And that. When Rachel was on the scene, there was no Lorelai yet. We know that. We know the timeline's a little fishy, and maybe they had briefly met, whatever. So Rachel leaves him. Right. And he was heartbroken about it. And we know that. We know the town has made it clear to us that you were heartbroken. Mm-hmm. So when you're heartbroken, all you want is, if she would just come back to me, if she would just come back to me, if she would just come back to me. Well, interestingly enough, she did. So he's like, ah, this is what I wanted. But little did you know, during that time, you fell in love with somebody else, mm-hmm. way more, way deeper. But it's still like, it's not a thing yet. So it's like, I think he's happy with Rachel, and it seems very comfortable and very real and authentic and genuine. And they really do love each other.
A day late and a dollar short.
Yep. And she's not his soulmate anymore.
Nope, not no
and
more.
He knows it, which is why you're not even that stressing about when she's going to leave. Right. You're just kind of like, she's going to go.
Right. That is not a man in love.
You can tell at the movie theaters too, about like, they kind of had a little PDA, but then he would turn back and look at Lorelai, and then Lorelai would look at him, and you know, you can tell exactly mm-hmm. what you just said, right. just in that scene alone.
Right.
And like we talked about, you're not going to like kiss her in the stock room. She's not going to kiss you in the stock room. There's none of that. It's not like it's going to be scandalous. It's just like, I guess, just like you've been waiting for Lorelai through Max, and Lord knows who else is coming. She's got to do the same for you. And it's just, these two are going to be waiting.
I think Lorelai allows Luke to be who he really is. And Lorelai accepts him for what he is. And he gets frustrated and a little angry and a little curmudgeonly. And she delights in that. She likes that. And he's a different person with Rachel. And I just feel like, I don't think he's putting on an act with Rachel. I just think he's kind of out of his comfort zone with her now.
I have a question. There was something that I didn't totally get in this episode. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I wanted to get it. I knew it was important. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why am I not understanding this? The very last scene, Lorelai and Rory are drinking the coffee. And they both say, does this taste different yep. to you?
Yeah.
Can you explain to me what that was, what that meant? What was that?
That Rachel's not being a good influence on Luke. He's off center. He's not as sure of himself. He, you know, his world, whatever his world was before Rachel or getting over Rachel and kind of, you know, flirting around with Lorelai and almost popping the, you know, you want to go out questions on several times. Is that's who he is. He's solidly feet on the ground. That's him. And he loves her. And he's pining for her. He's not thinking about Rachel. I mean, he might think about her in passing, but I think his mind is occupied with scenarios of his future with Lorelai. I do. And he really, truly, truly, deeply loves her. Mm-hmm. All to the point where he's standoffish somewhat. And really having to build up the courage and take the chance that she'll say no, because that takes a lot of guts. I mean, the more you like a girl, the more of a coward you become in certain situations because you don't want to hear that no. And I think he's in that place with Lorelai, obviously. But with Rachel, it's like he's not himself. He's not being himself. It's not a version of him that ever was going to work out with her. And I think maybe he's realizing it. Mm-hmm. He had to be a certain way to please her. That's not him. Maybe that's part of the reason that she left, because it's not right. She left because she didn't feel right in the dynamic. He didn't feel right in the dynamic. There was something, you know, there were a couple of false notes being hit there. So, you know, why, if it was so great, why is she running off? I mean, and plus, you know, she wanted to travel and the whole thing, and he never wants to leave the town. But yeah, the coffee that tastes different indicates that obviously something's a little off here.
Yes.
Something's a little off, and that gives Lauren hope and concern for her friend who she loves. Because is she doing the right thing by carrying out Rachel's requests to sort of close the deal for her? And it's kind of a strange dynamic she finds herself
very,
in.
Very weird. Right?
Now she realizes that she probably shouldn't be doing that because the coffee's off. Luke's not himself. I love him. He's my friend, and he's going to be my boyfriend. And I wish he was, and I wish he'd get the, you know, grow a pair and finally, you know, like get over here and let's start this thing.
Yeah, I don't actually, I don't think we're overthinking this. I think that everything you're saying is at play. Mm-hmm. There is more going on here than everyone's using in their words. Mm-hmm. I think to myself, am I overthinking this? Am I reading too much into it? It's like, no, I think we're analyzing it pretty correctly in that she wants to do right by you.
Yes.
She wants you to be happy.
Right.
She thinks Rachel's making you happy. So she wants to do that, where there is that other part of her that's like, you just see it all in the stockroom, unless there's something standing in your way.
Right. But in the the coffee that's a little off, that's a signal to Lorelai, Rachel's not right for him. Mm-hmm. And that gives her concern and hope.
She is perfectly cast, though. God, I think what's her name? Lisa Ann Hadley.
Right.
She is cast so well because she is so pretty.
Yeah.
She looks nothing like Lorelai.
Right.
She's, you really do like her.
Right.
You can't not like her.
Right.
Yeah, she's lovely. And so it's like, God, they really found the perfect person to play that part.
Yeah.
Because even that the dragonfly and all of it seems like, you know, I think she's befriending Lorelai for the right reasons, as opposed to keep your enemies closer. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I feel like she wants to be friends with her and she doesn't seem threatened by her.
It forces her to question a lot of what Luke wants in his life and therefore what she wants in her life. Does she want him more? Does she want him less? But the thing... Yeah, because she's such a different person. I found the exchanges between Rachel and Lorelai to be kind of awkward and forced. And I didn't think that they melded well as people, you know? And I also don't feel the chemistry between Rachel and Luke. I feel it with Lorelai.
I thought about that too. So when Luke comes up to the apartment to put something in the safe, he says, "Hi." You know, a cute hi, but they don't like kiss. There's not a ton of affection. Mm-mm. Have we even seen them kiss? I'm trying to remember.
Do you know what the problem is? Do you know what Rachel can't compete with? And she's all that in a bag of chips in terms of her positivity and her glowing, clean, scrubbed nature. Just a beautiful soul through and through. Is that there's no darkness in her.
Right. There's no edge. There's no sarcasm.
And there's ton of darkness and edge in Luke and in Lorelai, but they are from completely different worlds. So they seem, I mean, especially in that scene.
That's a perfect note. I think you're right.
When he came into his apartment and said, "What are you doing here?" I mean, they fall into their rhythm like that, like they're together. Like they belong together almost.
Yeah. Yes. They're two puzzle pieces that totally fit.
Yeah.
Whereas Rachel is the shiny object that you say, like, you should like her. Look at her on paper. She's great.
Right.
But it's like in reality, it's not about what's on paper.
Luke's tough. He's a tough guy. But Lorelai's really tough. Mm-hmm. She's as tough as he is.
It just seems like their connection is so deep too.
It is.
I think when we come back, I do need to talk to you about Luke's apartment, though, because this was really our first time getting to see that. And boy, did I analyze it differently watching it this time than I did the last, you know, four times I've seen this episode. And then I couldn't help because we did get we know that the sledgehammer scene is coming. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh my God, this apartment.
Yeah, that's one of the things I most strongly identify with Luke as a person.
Yes.
It's just that having a place that's convenient. Doesn't matter if it's glitzy, it's got to be convenient. And that is, that's why he sleeps there. Anyway, you want to take
a simple, Luke's a simple guy.
Simple, yeah. I do the same thing. To the horror of my wife, I do the same thing. Like, let's say we're looking for another place in a vacation spot, right? And there's the mansions that nobody can afford. And then there's sort of the lesser mansions that still nobody can afford now. And then like, hey, look at this dump. It's right by the lift. she's like, are you effing kidding me? We're not going there. You know what
that
I mean?
Is Luke. That is yes, Luke. And as we know, here's what's interesting.
But it's right there. You roll out of bed, you slap on the skis, you go.
It hasn't been revealed to us so much yet, but Luke has money.
Yeah.
Luke is living there by choice, not because he has to. That's all he can afford.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, no, he doesn't want he doesn't want the inconvenience and the bills and the responsibility of a real house. It's a big, you know, it's a big nut to bite off, man. It's just, it's and it's constant. So he's being smart, right? What the hell does he need? He's, you know, his dad left him a perfect situation, a business and a place to crash.
Let's break down the apartment. Let's break down the apartment when we come back.
All right. So we will be back in a new segment on our show. It's going to be apartment breakdown. We're getting into a little real estate discussion too. And that's a new angle for Gilmore Girls. Let's talk about real estate. We go from Luke to Emily Gilmore's mensch. All right, we'll be back after these words. Hey, everybody. For the best coffee in the world at the best price for a specialty coffee, go to ScottyP.com for your Scotty P's Big Mug Coffee. That's right. That's my company, ScottyP.com, for the best grade one specialty coffee beans direct from plantations and co-ops, micro-roasted European style, U.S. manufactured and packaged, fair trade assurance, quality control, the best coffee at the best price on planet Earth, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. All right, everybody, we're back. We're going to talk about Luke's apartment. What's the deal with Luke's apartment?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is there no bathroom door? Because I really could see the toilet.
There's a bathroom door. She had the door open because the photos were drying. She was hanging on those photos.
Give me Scott's thoughts on Luke's apartment.
It's the perfect place. It's convenient. It's right there. He wakes up, he goes downstairs. Nobody can really vandalize his place because he's right upstairs and nobody knows that. They're not going to get away with anything. I mean, that's his world. He's protecting his world. He's right there. I relate to that so strongly.
His apartment is very Luke. It's not gross, but it's not fabulous.
I had an apartment like that when I got the show, and then I stayed in that apartment for 3 years until my accountant was screaming at me saying, you got to buy a house or you're going to have to write a huge check to the government. I said, all right, now it's time to buy a house.
Do we call the apartment a studio? Would we call it a studio?
That is a studio apartment.
A loft?
Yes. No, that's a studio. Maybe it's a studio. Well, loft. I mean, it's above. Yeah. Maybe it's a studio loft. Yeah. Good.
Studio. Yeah. So it's got the kitchen. It's got the bathroom. Mm-hmm. There's definitely the bed, which was interesting because that was like, oh my God, that's where Luke sleeps. And it had like the one pillow, and then it had that sort of chair pillow on it. It, you know what I'm talking about? You know those pillows that are like chair pillows. You know, they have arms. Then he's got the couch. So it's not itty bitty.
No.
It's not so small. It's not big.
No, it's perfect for one person or two people who like each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's not a roommate of situation. It's like where lovers can be there and...
And who did the curtains?
Luke did the curtains.
And did you do that as a touch for Rachel?
I think that is a, you know what that is? That's a question for our audience to email us about. Because they probably know. Because they know everything.
Yeah.
So that's the question. What's the deal with the curtains, people?
And I also want to know how they interpreted the coffee scene we were talking about. Because I think you're pretty much nailing it, but I want to see if anybody else has different thoughts. So, okay, Riley and Danielle, what do you think of the apartment?
It screamed dude to me, but very, very, in a good way. Not in a, like a gross, crusty way. And like a guy definitely lives here. You know?
Crusty way.
I definitely agree. It was very minimal and easy, like quick access. It was very dude-like.
All right. Skis and boots right there at the front door.
Rory and Lorelai's is just filled with crazy crap.
Yeah, but that's a home. That's a warm, loving home filled with...
But they like clutter. I mean, come on. Yeah. Rory and Lorelai like clutter.
But they're... That's a loving home filled with memories and filled with memorabilia of their memory. You know, it's a nice, warm space. It really is. And it's not a big place. It's got a foyer. It's got a living room. It's downstairs, a bedroom downstairs, and a kitchen downstairs. And then a couple of bedrooms upstairs.
And then it's not huge.
That's,
you know, it has that nice front yard, though.
Right.
How epic, going backwards to this episode, was the Charlie's Angels plates, though.
Oh, God.
She's all, it's easy to find a Kate Jackson. You know, it's hard. A Tonya Roberts. Like, I was just like, and it's going over these young people's heads. But for me, like, Charlie's Angels is just everything.
It's such a relief to see Emily in her element with her granddaughter and to just imagine what she really wanted for Lorelai and how she wanted to be with Lorelai. And it, you know, it gives it this sort of tragic proportion to it, but it's nice to see Emily in a good mood. I love seeing her. She goes, oh, I really, after leaving Mrs. Kim, she goes, oh, I like that woman. And oh, I love this street. Look at that. I mean, she's just, everything's glowing for her now. And
in her tennis shoes.
In her tennis shoes. What about when Emily gets upset when she sees the shed and she goes running off and Rory's like, was it the teriyaki?
Did she say that?
Remember they went to like, was it Teriyaki Joe's?
Teriyaki Joe's, yeah.
And you can tell Emily's running, was it the teriyaki?
She looks like a Clydesdale in those shoes.
The whole thing was so good. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much. And then, you know, we should talk about for a minute your thoughts on Emily creating the room for Rory. I mean, we touched on it briefly, but like.
Well, I wish I had grandparents that did that for me when I was growing up. That would have been nice. Yeah. I mean, what a beautiful gesture. And again, I said it before, it's just her, all of her stored up love and affection being thrown upon Rory, and she's the beneficiary of it. She will continue to be the beneficiary of it. And it's amazing how that can provoke Lorelai. I mean, something so good-natured and so positive for her daughter puts her in conflict with her own mother. I mean, it's just such a circle. But I think it was a wonderful gesture. I think it's I really, really like Emily. I really like her. I know she's overbearing, and I know she made some mistakes with Lorelai, and Lorelai had no choice. I get it. But man, I really like her. I really like her. She's a fighter, man. She's tough, and that's where Lorelai gets it. She gets that steel from her mother, you know, that backbone of iron, and that's where Rory gets it. I mean, that's handed down from Emily. So it's just wonderful to see. It's really wonderful to see Emily also deflect all of the negativity and jokes and shtick and vaudeville quips coming at her from Lorelai. Five, four, three, and there it is. It's like, man, I mean, it's just like what she gets away, what she's tolerating to spend time with her granddaughter, spending the money, paying for the college, getting her way.
Yeah.
Good for her. I'm really rooting for her.
I love having Emily in Stars Hollow. And I know I said it, but the scene with Emily and Mrs. Kim is just so great. And it really is. And you see the genius of both of them. You're like, God, Mrs. Kim rocks too.
Couple of tough ladies, you know, good businesswomen going at it.
And Emily is just having a good time with Rory. Right. It's really sweet. And Emily and Michelle, I mean, I know we talked about it, but they, of course, those two would immediately love each other.
But she never, you know, Emily never got to enjoy Lorelai up to a certain point, and then it was done, over. You know, by the time Lorelai was 14, 15 years old, they were having massive conflict to the point where she went out and.
Well, yeah, we learned that when Trix was here, that Emily cannot take anybody getting in the way of her having this relationship with Rory.
Right.
It's her whole life now.
Yes. Imagine how good that makes her feel.
Yeah.
Your granddaughter. Oh, my God. And such a. I mean, talk about a person with such unlimited potential in Rory. I mean, she must feel so proud, and she's going to contribute to her education. Right. It's like everything I tried to do in my own family with my niece, and you know, it's a wonderful. She's just having the time of her life. She's having these wonderful experiences with Rory, getting closer and closer to her, spending more time with her. It's wonderful to see. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, and I. You know, I know we have to wrap up and do some pop culture, but I know that what we saw in this episode is just teeing up what happens next week. It's like, buckle up.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Right, I'm going to try not to watch it today.
Yeah, I peeked ahead and it was like, all right. Oh, my.
All right. Take it easy. Take it easy. Don't give up the ghost.
It's just getting better and better. Right, you know, right. Let me ask you this before we do pop culture. Mm-hmm. And I know that everyone talks about how Amy and Dan weren't there for season 7 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know how year 2, 3 are never as good as year 1? With Gilmore Girls, would you say it got better and better and better?
I don't know. I honestly can't answer that. Because I haven't seen the episodes. And now, I mean, I'm seeing these episodes for the first time and they are mind-blowingly good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it's real. It's time to wake up. Time to wake up. I wake up to that every morning at 6:30, by the way. Okay.
Literally that alarm is telling us like,
it's time 6:30 and then 10 minutes later, right? 6:40 and then 6:50 and then 6:57. And then I go get my boy, right? I go into his bedroom and say, come on, let's go, buddy. My wife's there like,
I think I was listening to Conan O'Brien's podcast and he was interviewing Michael Keaton, who I like have a huge love for Michael Keaton. Uh-huh. And Michael Keaton's alarm went off during it, but he has that guitar strum one. And you're just like, oh my God. So good.
How revealing your
ring. Who doesn't time love an alarm going off during a podcast? Anyway, we obviously, you know, I'm enjoying you watching it for the first time because it does get even better.
I can't imagine how it can even get better, because it's just, my God, it's so intricate. It's so interwoven. It's just growing and growing and growing.
You'll see.
Oh my God. Ah. Highly addictive show. Highly
it
addictive.
Is. I know. It's so hard not to let the Netflix just roll
I know
the next one.
That's so what hard. I want to do. Is after I get off of this, I'm like clearing the schedule. I'm going to.
Yeah.
I'm like, so just cancel all my appointments. You know? I'm watching Gilmore Girls. Emily's on the, you know, Emily's feeling good and I want to feel good too. What do you mean? God. What are you talking about? Come to dinner. I'm watching Gilmore Girls. Leave me alone. Now I get it, right? It's like, I want to have it on the background all the time.
I know. That's the same thing with me, but yet it's 2 a.m. and I'm like, I think I can do one more.
Really?
I think I can do one
really
more.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not there yet, but I'm getting there.
Late at night.
I'm getting there. Hey, everybody. I'm going to be in New York City at the Javits Center October 7th and 8th. That's a Thursday and a Friday at the New York Comic Con, the revered New York Comic Con. Big event. Javits Center, New York City, October 7th and 8th. If you want tickets, come by and say hello. I will be there October 7th and 8th, Thursday and Friday. Go to NewYorkComicCon.com and get tickets. Also, you can go to my website, ScottyP.com, and click the link and get tickets as well. Hope to see everybody. Looking forward.
All right, Riley,
you're on.
Now, Riley, bring your A game, because why don't you read the comments? Because they need more from you.
I will give A++ everything I have in this. I might need to take a nap after. It's coming at you.
Let's
straight
see.
Fire. All right, I'm Riley, and this is your pop culture. So first, we have the title itself. Emily in Wonderland. So we've talked about Alice in Wonderland on this podcast before, but here are a couple more fun facts. So Alice was a real girl and was the daughter of author Carol's boss, Henry. And Queen Victoria was a fan of Carol and even suggested that he dedicate his next work to her. Lane refers to Emily and Kim bargaining back and forth, and Lane says, it's like watching the Williams sisters. You can't think of women's tennis without naming sisters Venus and Serena Williams. Serena and Venus are 2 of 5 girls in their family. Will Smith is set to play Richard Williams' father to tennis icons Venus and Serena Williams in a new movie called King Richard. And Serena married and started a family along with Alexis Ohanian, the co-founder of Reddit. Sookie compares Rune's stay at Jackson's to the movie The Lost Weekend. The Lost Weekend, which is about an alcoholic's 4-day drinking binge, which seems to drag on forever. Lorelai says, I thought he was only here for a weekend. And Sookie says, The Lost Weekend. So The Lost Weekend is a 1945 drama Billy Wilder claimed the liquor industry offered Paramount Pictures $5 million to not only release the film, but he also suggested that he would have accepted the offer to him. He would have accepted the offer himself personally. And to prepare for the part, Ray Milland spent one night in Bellevue Hospital as a patient. He also stopped eating regularly as alcoholics forget to do so. Lorelai says, I don't know exactly what's going on in Rachel's head because I'm not a Vulcan. We have talked about the Vulcans and their grip, but here are a couple more fun facts. Beginning in the original series, the character Spock was able to mind meld by touching another being's head and share thoughts. Vulcans have their own language in the Star Trek universe, so English was dubbed over the Vulcan translation. And an interesting twist, Adam Nimoy directed Season 1, Episode 3, Kill Me Now of Gilmore Girls, and his father, Leonard, played Spock in the original Star Trek. Little blend of two worlds there. Lorelai makes this reference as Emily is becoming more casual, which we've talked about. Lorelai says, I can't picture you at Teriyaki Joe's or in jogging shoes. What's up, Working Girl? Working Girl is a 1988 American romantic comedy drama film starring Melanie Griffith and Harrison Ford. No one expected it to be the hit it was. Melanie Griffith has admitted that she found her co-star Alec Baldwin, who plays her cheating ex-boyfriend Mick, extremely attractive and even went so far as to pursue a romantic relationship with the actor. Brother Stephen Baldwin used to be famous for his acting and now is known in pop culture as Hailey Bieber's father.
Oh, that's right.
So true. So true.
That's right.
Lorelai says, the old potting shed? That's where Rory and I lived when she was a baby. It has memories and a little rosebud wallpaper. I don't want Boo Radley touching my rosebud wallpaper. She refers to Rune as Boo Radley.
Kill a Mockingbird.
Exactly. Boo Radley is a character from Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Actor Robert Duvall played Boo Radley in the 1962 film interpretation.
Can I just interject here? That was one of the more terrifying moments of my childhood when my parents and I and my sisters were watching To Kill a Mockingbird, and we'd watch it every year. It was like a yearly ritual. But that first time that, I guess in the courtroom, is that the first time you see Robert Duvall as Boo Radley? Just gave me nightmares. What a great performance by a great actor. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
To look so creepy, actually, he stayed out of the sun for 6 weeks and dyed his hair blonde for the role of Boo Radley. Mm-hmm. So Emily calls Rory to ask big questions. We later find out is to for her room. Emily says, sunflowers it is. Now, what about music? NSYNC or 98 Degrees? Emily says, what about that other group? The Backside Boys.
She ended up going with the 90 Degrees poster, which was maybe that was all they could clear. Maybe it was clearance.
So NSYNC, 98 Degrees, and actually Backstreet Boys, these three groups are what you think of when thinking of boy bands. In a crazy twist, AJ McLean, Lance Bass, and Nick Lachey all presented at the VMAs this year. The boy band throwback we all needed.
Yeah, boy bands just don't go away. They're like cockroaches.
They keep coming back and dancing better than ever.
Just what a nice thing to say.
I love them. I'm a big boy band fan, but like they don't go away. Like those guys have all been around for like 30 years now.
Was Nick Carter in one of those boy bands?
Yeah, he's a Backside Boy.
So let me tell you, I was, you know, I do personal appearances, and I was requested for a private birthday party for some a very lovely heiress type person from another country.
Nancy.
Yes. So they fly you in, the whole deal. And
she just loves Saw so much.
And I thought I was the main gig. I thought I was it.
Oh my God.
I was a warm up act for Nick Carter. And Nick Carter showed up and with my producer on guitar, by the way.
Oh, so Nick performed.
Nick
that's
performed
legit.
A set with a guitar and a sort of little
legit
couple guitars and acoustic guitars and I think a drum machine. And he was fantastic.
Yeah, those guys can all sing.
Oh, he can sing his ass off. He can sing his Backside Boys off.
Yeah. They're really called the Backstreet.
I know
but I'm just going with,
Emily. Great songs. And he was, I mean, what a performer. Yeah,
Those guys can all sing.
Oh, but I mean, but just how he performed, and she was enthralled. And she's like, you know, she'd look at me and go, "What are you doing here?" Yeah.
No, those guys are all around
he was,
still.
He was great. Everybody.
Yeah.
I was clapping my hands along with everybody else, man. I was like, go, Nick.
Every band she said, 90 Degrees, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, is still totally relevant today. Yeah. Like literally 90 Degrees just released an album. Backstreet Boys are still totally touring and releasing. They just were nominated for a Grammy a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And then NSYNC, everybody's just waiting for the reunion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Justin's like, yeah, I don't need that.
Oh, he was involved with
Timberlake is NSYNC.
Justin Bieber was involved with
Timberlake, Justin.
Oh, Timberlake. He was involved with these kids.
He was NSYNC.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. I thought he was in a group with Britney. Where didn't they have like the Britney and Justin?
Oh my God, Scott is putting a dagger through my 90s heart right now.
Didn't they have like a Sonny and Cher? Didn't they have their own show like Sonny and Cher?
No, Justin dated Britney.
Like, well, why did they? They always wore denim together. Everybody was wearing denim.
Yes, that's an iconic photo. But they were dating. They weren't a band.
They didn't have a band together?
That was an outfit they wore by choice.
I have no idea. I gotta read. I gotta do some reading. Clearly, I gotta bone up on my.
You do. Boy band history.
Jeez. Anyway.
Speaking of great singers, Rory and Lorelai are walking down the street, and Lorelai is upset about wanting a real connection with Emily. And Rory says, "Can I ask you a question?" Lorelai says, "Yes, I would date Steven Tyler."
Okay, I was debating whether or not to tell the story, but No, wait.
But what did Rory say?
Rory says, "Can I ask you a question?" Whose answer wouldn't horrify me?
So here's what I will say about Steven Tyler. Uh-huh. Number one, he's the nicest man on the planet.
I've met him. Yeah.
So I'm friendly with Steven Tyler because I also produce Ryan Seacrest's show. Yeah. And obviously Ryan and Steven are friends. So we were all on vacation in Lake Tahoe together. And I'm very close with Steven's manager. So we were having a barbecue. So we're like, oh, just come over. So they're going to come by boat on Lake Tahoe. And we're thinking like I don't know why. I just thought it was going to be a boat like everyone else has on Lake Tahoe. A tiny, little, tiny boat. We look out the window and we're like, that's not a boat. Like, that's a yacht. Like, what's going on? So we like call them and we're like, do you have a captain on that thing? Like, we can't park that thing. Anyway, long story short, we get them off the boat. Even in his like Tahoe casual, Steven is very recognizable, mm-hmm. and I'm not making this up. We were walking. He's just a regular dude. So we're just walking to the market to get hot dogs and hot dog buns. I'm not making this up. It's straight out of the movie. A guy, not even a kid, like a man on a bike is biking on the path that we're walking on and literally saw Steven Tyler and almost fell off the bike. Because people are just like, what is happening? Yeah. So, that's my Steven Tyler story.
He's very, he's a man of the people. He likes to be out there with the people.
Totally.
He's not a stuck-up diva guy, as far as I can tell.
He's the coolest.
Yeah,
He just wanted a hot dog bun. Like, he just couldn't have been happier. But he cannot be inconspicuous. Like, that's the thing.
Right.
He just is immediately, doesn't matter if there's a hat or glasses, nothing.
He's one of the great front men in rock history. He's not shy. He's not a shy guy.
Yeah.
A couple of fun facts about Steven Tyler. He has his own line of scarves called Rock Scarf.
He has said
in an interview that he can live off of a good compliment for 2 months.
Wow.
Very sweet. All right, so our last one coming in hot is Emily and Rory talking about Charlie's Angels, which we've discussed a little bit, but the actual quotes are, Emily says, there are women in bikinis on them, talking about the plates, and Rory says, the original Charlie's Angels, it took us years to complete a set.
Who's your favorite angel, your favorite Charlie's Angel of the OG original Charlie's Angels?
Farrah Fawcett.
Obviously, me too. Yeah. Me too.
I mean, by a mile.
By a bajillion miles.
All great. They're all great. And, wow, wow, wow. But Farrah Fawcett was
Agree. Jacqueline Smith is as lovely today as she was in the 70s. Yeah. But if I could ever get my hair to look like Farrah Fawcett, I'd be such a happy gal.
Yeah.
Farrah Fawcett. Oh,
I didn't have her poster on my bedroom wall.
The red bathing suit
one? Yeah, didn't. No. But I knew people that did.
Nor did I, but I still love her hair. She was amazing.
Fun fact about that poster. The leading ladies were asked to do a promotional poster for the show, but only Fawcett agreed to do it. And the poster sold over 12 million copies long before the show's pilot episode even hit the TV screen.
Yeah. Did she get, I guess she got a piece of that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
She made probably bank.
More red bathing suits.
Yeah, man.
She's just iconic. Yep. I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to start Googling photos of her hair right after this.
The show aired from 1976 to 1981, and at the time of the show was known for having the largest wardrobe budget. The show had about $22,000 for wardrobe for each episode.
Oh.
Back then, that was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Kind of like your Gilmore Girls wardrobe budget. Oh, wait, no. You wore like the same shirt and the same
My hat. Budget? You know, just once a year. Or no. Actually, a couple times a year. I would go back to my trailer and there would be 20 flannel shirts with a note. Scott, please try these on. Let us know what you like.
That's it.
That was because I wore my jeans. No, they had jeans for me that I wore, but I wore them home. And then that's all I did is I wore those all year. I had my boots that they gave me and I wore them home. Right. I left the hat there. I left the flannel there. It was so easy. Good. What a gig.
So good.
What a great gig.
Yeah, seriously. You had it. Made.
And it's like, if I had to do it the second time during the year, there'd be 20 more shirts. I'd be like, again? You know?
That's so good. So good.
And the poor girls, it's like every day, there's like 20 things I got to go through and try on.
And did you have like two of each? Probably because if you spilled or ripped
I think so. Probably.
I would assume.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, they kept it. The budget was pretty tight on your wardrobe. It's like, yeah. So easy.
I didn't cost them much, I'll tell you.
Because they weren't even like the fancy of flannels. Yeah. They were your basic old flannel. Okay, my favorite line I already did, and I don't know why it tickled me so much, but it's when Kirk's like, and Lorelai's just like, you got a cold, Kirk. For some reason, I don't know.
It was a great scene. You want to try that in with final butter, center, meta, peta, peta. Don't be driving a tractor.
That was
like
a
make
great
you
Kirk moment. That's like one of my favorite Kirks so far. Really good.
Yeah, it was good. Good for a laugh.
What do you got, Riley?
My favorite line is from Lorelai, and she says, I'm sorry. I missed the checkered flag. When did the argument start?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Danielle.
My favorite was already said by Emily when she goes, what about the backside boys? So I'll give you another one. This one's from Lorelai, and it's kind of in the beginning of the episode, but she goes, I don't know, maybe it got lost in my big head after they were talking about Lorelai having a big head as a baby.
Oh my God, wait, was this the episode where Luke says, here's your breakfast without eyes?
Yes.
Yes, that was the title. That's the title we used for this podcast episode.
Yes.
Oh my God, of course. Yes. That's such a good one.
Because she didn't want the eggs on top of her pancakes.
That was a great bit, by the way. Yeah. That whole scene was so good.
Yeah. Did you give your favorite?
Yeah, mine still, I am reconsidering that it could be, here's your breakfast, no eyes, but I also like, you got a cold, Kirk. So this one had a lot.
So wait a minute, you get to go twice. I haven't even gone yet. What's the deal? What's going on here? It's like you could
I'm so bossy.
It's like I'm getting robbed. I mean, it's like, where's my opportunity? Just go ahead and step in. Go ahead. Jesus. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I like the Michelle line when Rune says it wasn't exactly a highlight of my life, and then Michelle says, and I'm sure there are so many to choose from. He slays me. That guy slays me, man. He can come on for one scene and just kill me. I love that guy. I love that character.
Am I right that we only have two episodes left of season one?
I can't even. Is that true?
I think that's right.
I just can't even
believe check it. While you wrap it up.
That is correct.
Huh? Oof. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
Crazy.
What an episode. All right, kids. I think we talked this one out pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I do too. And we'll get some feedback on those questions.
We rode that hard and put it away well. We need to get this horse in the barn, ladies and gentlemen.
That's so true. I know it went over. My alarm went off 20 minutes ago. Wrap it up, dude.
I got bigger fish to fry, buddy. That's what my alarm tells me. Bigger fish to fry. All right, everybody. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening in. You're the best fans on the planet. We love you. Keep sending the comments. We can take it. Yeah. We've got thick skins at this point. We have leathery, saddle-y, old west skins from your very constructive, very, very appreciated comments, whether they're negative or positive. We don't discriminate. We learn. We evolve. We reconstruct.
And next week is PSI Le.
What?
PSI Le.
Excuse me? PSI Le? What are you talking about?
That is next week's episode.
That's the name of the episode, PSI Le?
PSI Le.
Mm-hmm. PSI Le? What are you even saying? You're freaking me out right now.
When you watch it, you'll find out.
That's the name of the episode, PSI Le. What?
P.S.
Yes.
Like, I Le.
Oh, PSI Le. Okay. I thought you were speaking a different language. What the heck are you doing? You need to set that alarm off again. All right, everybody. Thank you. You're the best fans on the planet. And, I need to eat something. All right, everybody. PSI Le. PSI Le, everyone. I love you. And, I'm Scott Patterson. This is the Ball Club. Thanks, Danielle. Thanks, Amy. Thank you, Riley. And we'll see you next time. I'm Scott Patterson, and this is the I Am All In podcast from iHeartRadio 111 Productions. Stay safe, everyone. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.